messy. But we don't want to lose sight of translating. We left off in John 2. Talking about the wedding at Cana of Galilee and the water being turned to wine, I think is where we were. Okay, everybody. They don't have any text back there, do they?
I think there's only one on the library.
Okay, maybe some of you guys can look on someone else here. I think we'll just go around the class once. In the undergrad library?
Yeah, they use it for
the... Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, maybe somebody can go run and grab... Yeah, why don't you grab a couple of them, Greg, so that somebody else has forgot. Yeah. You got yours, Kate? Good. I think we'll just go around once everybody gets a chance to translate one sentence, and then we'll go back. Oh, he did too, so we'll probably have... he just went to get one. Okay. Thanks, Eric.
I don't want the dictionary
back. Yeah.
That's the way it might be. That's why I'm going to miss
this one. What am I going to do when I give you a test? My tests are going to be given out of UBS, so... You guys have dictionaries in the back of the fair. Just have to hold it to your honor. Okay. My marker indicates that we finished verse 10 of chapter 2. And remember we were talking about the good wine being saved for the last and so forth. I believe that's correct. I don't know if we got into... Yeah, right. We hadn't gotten to 11 yet. So 11's next. John, do you want to take verse 11, chapter 2?
Now came the place, and our king told Simeon, which in Cana, tis Galileas, kai ephanerosen, tis roxan autu, kai epistusan, is auton, poimatitai autu.
Okay, good.
Now you want a translation?
Yeah. Hopefully a translation. Interpretation can involve other things. This construction is going to be a little bit not straightforward. Just because of the word order.
This. Okay, is who Jesus then the subject?
Yes.
Of what he said?
Yes.
Okay, so.
The tricky part here is tautain.
Okay, that's all right.
Is separated from arcane in this.
Okay. So Jesus gave this first sign.
Okay, that's the gist of it. That's the gist of it. Jesus did this. Jesus did this, and you might even supply it as a beginning of signs. The reason I say that is because, you see, your tautain would normally, if it's going to be an attributive, demonstrative adjective, it's going to be stuck right onto arcane. The fact that it's separated from arcane puts you into more of an appositional structure, where Jesus did this, a beginning of signs. And that might be probably the best translation. Jesus did this, a beginning of signs, rather than this beginning of signs, because the adjective demonstrative is separated.
Yeah.
You might say Jesus did this, a beginning of signs.
Okay. In Cana of Galilee, And let's see, that's an O verb, isn't it?
Yes.
And
fun arrow O. It's an O verb, I think. Let me check.
Showing his glory.
Mm-hmm.
Revealing his glory. And
your subject at the end again.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it went back to Jesus again.
Yeah, that wouldn't work
and
very well.
No, it wouldn't. That's what I thought. So strange. And let's see. And the his disciples
mm-hmm.
Had faith in him.
Yes. Okay, into him, yeah.
I like that.
Believed into him, had faith into him. Yeah. I like the way it's pictured in Greek, too. There's a lot more commitment pictured there.
Right?
Yes.
Another thing over there, is on that last part where it says that Kai and his two sons,
yes.
So is that saying that, and they believed into him, the disciples, his disciples?
Well, yes, in a way. The word order, you see, you got the verb form first and the subject last. There's an emphasis difference. You know, you could just as easily say, hoi mathetaio to epistusan eis auton. But to word it this way and put the epistusan there, a little bit more emphasis on that. And his disciples believed in him, you know. In English, we would probably put an intonation stress on belief.
Isn't the verb coming first normally in Greek?
Huh? Well, yeah, in Hebrew it normally does, but in Greek, I don't know, it's kind of a... I'm not sure, I never really thought about which way it goes. It happens both ways.
I noticed something else here.
There's a paper for somebody to go through and count the number of times it's first and sometimes it's second. Yeah, go ahead.
That's familiar here, where we have verb, indirect object, or in this case, a prepositional phrase.
Mm-hmm.
Prepositional phrase, then the subject, and that's something that's the same as what we see in Hebrew, right?
Yeah.
Is that just something that's typical of the language, or is it...
There's a real good question involved whenever you're dealing with New Testament Greek, and that is how much is Hebrew influencing the word order. And I don't know if Jim Blanchard's going to get into that in his paper or not, but I hope he does. But as far as the Greek is concerned, though, you'll see it subject first, verb. Sometimes you'll see verb first, subject, and then prepositional phrases. What happens here is you got verb, prepositional phrase, then subject right at the end. And it's not real frequent that you see the subject right at the end. So that should be considered. It is, yeah. There's not much of a sentence there, or a phrase at least. Okay. We'll just have to keep watching. There's a... probably... I'm just, you know, looking at the page here. Since I think part of the problem is this, that since very frequently, especially in narratives where the subject has already been named and you're continuing on, you're seldom putting down the subject as a separate word. It's just he or she or whatever, and that's contained in the verb form. And because of that, you're not necessarily, you know, in other words, you're seeing the verb form first, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the subject isn't coming first. The subject may be included in the verb form. It's that pronominal sense. So I think that it'd be kind of hard to evaluate this because of that fact, because of the fact that the subject is contained in the verb form, by and large, unless, you know, when it's a narrative like that, where you're telling a whole story about what a person did. You start off saying Jesus in one sentence, and then he, which all is coming out just as a verb form, and you're not having a separately stated subject. So that can raise a question as to whether the subject is coming first or not. Well, if the subject is part of the verb form, I suppose you'd have to say it is, at least in English.
Just looking at what we've got here, it seems to me that in this word, we're specifically stating subject,
mm-hmm.
and direct object, that it seems to be verb direct object. That's all.
Yeah. That may be the most predominant. Most of the books don't make a big point of, you know, an order like that. Whereas in Hebrew, there is a general word order, verb, subject, you know. And something to watch. We can maybe make some general conclusion. We don't really need to, you know, have a dogmatic conclusion about it since nobody's putting that much emphasis on it. But we'll just keep an eye open for it. I never really thought that much about it.
Well, I just don't understand the emphasis.
sign.
Yes.
Whether it's just because that's the way they normally speak or whether it's something important.
Well, there's a tendency to put the most important things either at the very beginning or at the very end, and everything else in the middle, you know. So,
another thing you said there, and just a question popped into my mind, because it's kind of a conceptual thing, is it proper to say that the subject is included in the verb, or that without a distinct subject, then we look to the verb and see that there is information there. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah, I think
that the subject is contained in the verb, or you know, just a matter of.
Well, let's put it this way: the verb does have inflected endings.
Right.
They're inflected for person number, and so that information is there in the verb,
right.
whether there's a subject or not.
Right.
So that's a feature of the verb form itself. And so, in that sense, you might say the subject's contained in it. But obviously, the subject isn't overtly expressed,
mm-hmm.
and so that's what you may have to define it just that way. So, in the absence of anything else, certainly you're going to look at that. And there's certain ambiguities, though. Say, a third person could be masculine, feminine, or neuter. You don't know. So we don't have gender, you know, inflected. Although with Hebrew, some of the verbs in Hebrew have the gender aspect as well. So it may be, you know, kind of simplistic to say the subject is contained in the verb, but let's just put it this way: the verb is inflected for the subject.
Well, I think color for something regarding what he was saying. You know, is it really saying? Is it saying they believe into him, the disciples?
Oh, okay.
See, now that is conceptual. You know, how you're going to think about it, or is it that you look at that and you first look for the subject
mm-hmm.
before you?
Well, if you remember back in Dainamantian, and when we were talking about nominative, that's kind of the way he expressed it. He expressed it almost as if an overtly stated subject was kind of a nominative in apposition to the understood nominative of the he, you know, the verb form. In other words, he preached, that is, Paul. That's kind of the way he was saying. Yeah. So, but the fact that Dainamantian says it doesn't necessarily mean that all the other scholars would agree. You know, so it's kind of one of those things where it depends on your view of it. That's the data that we have. The data that we have, the fact that we have, is that the verb forms are inflected for the subject. And then in addition to that, we have other overtly stated subjects in addition to that, which do not change the inflection. And that's the fact. Now, what conclusions we draw from that, of course, is going to be up to the grammarian to a large extent. Okay. Verse 12. Jim, you're up next. Chapter 2, verse 12.
Methap tuto kanabe is kape kapara.
Kaparna un?
Yeah.
All right.
Kapris kai in himera altu kai. Where are the boy altu kai? Where mapitai altu kai? Epe himera u kora himera.
Okay, good.
After
this,
he went into Capernaum.
Okay, went down into Capernaum.
Yeah, into Capernaum.
It's caught the bino. Now here we have a string of nominatives.
Yeah, so him and his mother and the disciples, and, or and his brothers, and
mm-hmm.
disciples, and there remain not many days.
Right. Okay, and there they remain not many days. Okay, here's another interesting construction. Katebe is just third person singular. He went down, and then it says he and his mother and the brothers and his disciples, and so forth. So we've run into this before, and the Hebrew students run into this too, where they'll just, you know, use a singular verb and then add the other aspects of the subject in later on. And you could just as easily, you know, see a structure where they went down into Capernaum, he and his mother and his disciples and so forth. because you, technically it could be considered either a plural subject or you consider it a singular subject and then an understood but not stated verb for all the rest of them. That's sometimes what happens too. Then, of course, it's something when it says ek, they emenon, that's going back to the plural now, the whole group. Okay. Yes, Glenn?
Answer, put light on John's question. Because you're using a singular here, like a they, just to say he did. And then that's the subject, you know, contained in the verb. And then you're adding all these other things on
right.
to it. You know, like the verb just stands alone, and you're looking at the verb as a subject there. And then you go along in the sentence, and you find all these other ones, too, just sort of, oh, yeah, them, too.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
when you embrace it all, you know, it can't remain on. And then they remain, you know,
mm-hmm.
there. It's like you're embracing the whole thing after you looked at each one particular, each one through the sentence.
Sure. There's another reason, too, for something like this, and that is to show the leadership of Christ in this. In other words, Jesus went down and all the rest of them. Rather than saying they all went down where you may not be able to see any kind of preferred order. You know, if you just list them all together and say they went down, you don't know whether his mother was leading or he was leading, whatever. You certainly get an impression that Jesus was the one that initiated the action and the others were following along. So, yes.
Like he went down and the rest went with him.
Right, exactly. That's kind of the sense. See, in other words, what I want you to see is that this is not a violation of the grammatical rule of concord where a plural subject has to have a plural verb. Actually, we have a singular subject and a singular verb and then an additional list of other subjects with no verb. In other words, you could state it this way. After this, he went down into Capernaum and then... And the mother of him and the brothers and disciples and so forth, they also went down. And you could have, you know, but that's not being repeated because the verbal idea was also already stated and so forth. It's kind of an understood plural verb that's being attached into the rest of the group. But this is quite common. This is not only in Greek but also in Hebrew. That also raises the question as to if there's Hebraisms going on here. Yes.
Notice in this particular one, the main the variant is a singular.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, that would continue the same thing then. Yeah, and he remained and of course the implication, you know, you probably understand that the rest of them stayed there with him, but the whole storyline would be following him. You're watching him, and the others are just incidental additions there. Okay, interesting. Yes.
This is what I was wondering here. The would that necessarily be part of that string of nominatives, or would that be the subject of
Katebe? Well, it would be, I would consider it to be the subject of Katebe, and then your first Kai there is starting the list. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the fact that Autos is there is kind of, it's there because it's leading into the list. You know, otherwise you wouldn't need it. Or you could just leave it there and have an emphasis. But I think what's happening here is that he went down, and then you're saying he did and the rest of these did. In other words, it's kind of a parenthetical statement. All you needed to have is, after this he went down into Capernaum, period. But because he's going to tell you that it's not only him but others as well, then you put the autos in there, and then the rest of them to as a unit to put them together. But you know, like you say, that autos is referring back up to the first one, and the others being added on. But the autos is repeated there because you're adding other ones on. That's the reason for the emphasis, apparently. Yes.
That's what I'm wondering, if it really is repeated there, rather than after these things, he went down. And his mother and his brother
mm-hmm.
without repeating it there.
Well, I don't know. It's just a matter of emphasis more than anything else. I think if you weren't going to say in his mother and so forth, the autos probably wouldn't have been there here. You wouldn't need it unless you're drawing some special attention to it. And I think that the special attention drawn to it is because of the fact that you're wanting to say it was not only him but some others. So. He did, and so forth, because normally in a narrative like this, you wouldn't see an autos as the subject, and usually if you did, it would probably come right before the verb, autos katebe. If you want to put that kind of emphasis on it, but I think this is just there because it's repeating, but there's an emphasis too. But the emphasis is that it was not only him, but it was others as well. Okay, verse 13, Eric.
kai ngusen topaka on yudayon kai onebei e yeteru luma o yesus.
Okay.
And, you know, I don't remember.
Ngus?
Easter.
Yeah, Passover, yeah. Okay. I was going to mention that. There's in one place in King James, they translated Easter. In Acts, yeah. So that's incredible. But it's Passover, yeah.
That one translator who was doing that.
Yeah, I guess. See, the word Easter comes from paganism. It's a pagan, from the goddess Astarte or something. It's so, go ahead. Yeah.
And the Passover, did you... was near, and Jesus went down into Jerusalem.
Okay, this one's on a bit. I'll see what he went up.
Oh,
went up into Jerusalem. Yeah, he went down into Capernaum, but now he's going up to Jerusalem. Okay, and it's almost certainly a reference to elevation. In other words, the city of Jerusalem was very high in elevation, and Capernaum was down lower on the shore of the Dead Sea.
I just think the way they were thinking. Seems like they, whenever they went into Canaan's land, they went out into Canaan's land. Of course, that's the point.
If you're going from Egypt, if you're talking with reference to Egypt, it would be. Again, that's higher elevation. Egypt's down in the Nile Delta and so forth. And if you're going from Canaan, it's always down to Egypt. In other words, that's where they're thinking. In other words, we may make a mistake by thinking, well, north is up and south is down, you know, because of the globe.
They didn't show it that way.
Either. No. No, they're talking about elevation. If you follow this phraseology all the way through, you know, and know where the elevations are, it makes sense.
It can also be just a locality like when we live here. You come up to Seattle,
yeah.
No matter where you are.
Right.
Now, I guess we can talk
in terms of. Well, we usually do talk that way. I think most of
us. Sometimes the idea is
somebody's in Alaska, we say you come down to Seattle, you know.
Yeah, I guess so.
Of course, if you're in Massachusetts, you always go down Maine too.
Is that right? Is that right? Well, there goes the theory. But you know how those Easterners are, you know. Yeah. Okay. But here's you see a good contrast between Kate Bay and Ane Bay there, you know, the up and the down. Okay, 14 then, Glenn.
Columtas boas kai, probata kai, pensteras kai, tus kermates dat, campimenus.
Okay.
And I want to say Hebron. No, yeah. Hebron.
Okay, this is from Hurisco.
Oh, Hebron?
Yes.
I thought it was Phantom to bring.
Nope.
He found in the temple,
right.
Jesus,
right.
And he found in the temple the, I'm going to have trouble with a lot of these words.
Okay.
This
is the verb, just poluntas is a participle for selling, when selling.
Oh.
We've got we've got a substantive participle here.
Well, I would imagine that's cows.
Yeah, cattle. Mm-hmm. One selling cattle.
One selling cattle, and I'm sorry, I don't know that word either.
Okay, that's sheep.
Oh, it's in sheep.
And sheep and doves. Those are all.
Okay, the one selling cattle and sheep and doves.
Right, so you got a triple accusative there. In other words, a compound accusative.
Oh,
cat. You know, they were selling cattle, sheep, and doves. Okay?
It's like you get confused with those ties, I imagine. That
yes.
The one selling cattle, sheep, and doves, and selling.
Right. Yeah, but they weren't. They were. Yeah, it could be conceivably a problem there. They could have been selling the money changers too. You know. But usually money changers don't get sold, so you make your break there.
Well, money changers. I don't know what either one of these words are.
Okay.
The Cathimenos is.
That means to sit. Remain down, so they translate sitting. So they were sitting there. So in other words, Jesus finds in the temple.
Huh? What's that word from Kathos? Is it middle voice?
Let me double check it here so I can get the. It's kathemai. Okay, it is. I thought it might have involved. Yeah, that's min is from a participle. It's a present middle participle from kathemai. So we've got a me verb here. Well, no, just a deponent verb. So it's probably a deponent verb, but it's probably deponent because the idea of it is rather passive. When you're sitting, you know, you're not doing much action, so that's probably the reason for it. Okay, so he comes into the temple. He found in the temple the ones selling cattle and sheep and doves and the coin dealers sitting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's the dictionary form of the verb, yeah. Kappa, alpha, theta. And that's from the root, kat, down. The amai, I'm not positive what the root there would be. It doesn't look like it's from histamine or anything. So, kappa, amai, kappa, alpha, theta, eta, mu, alpha, iota. And then this is just a participle, a middle form of the participle with that min there, but that's probably because it's a deponent verb. In other words, you wouldn't have an active form of the participle for this verb. Okay. Because the idea of sitting is intransitive, too. You know, you're not going to sit something. Unless you sit it down, there's probably a different, you know, the idea of setting something in place or something would be a different verb. Okay, verse 15, then, unless there's any other questions on this. Yes, go ahead, Glenn.
Sure. I don't quite get what's going on here. And
that's just
sitting down, changing money.
That's just a noun. It's probably derived from a verb. There's probably a verb associated or something, but that kematistas is just an accusative plural noun.
Just money changers.
Yeah, money changers, coin dealers.
Who were sitting.
Right. Yeah. He sees them all sitting. See, the sitting probably refers both to the one selling and the coin dealers both. In other words, he comes into the temple and he finds... That's why diagramming is going to be helpful. If we diagram this, we would probably set it up such as... Jesus as the implied subject, found, and then in the temple would be an adverbial modifier telling where he found them. Found in the temple. What did he find? He found the ones selling and the coin dealers. And the ones selling were selling sheep and oxen, sheep and what? Cattle and doves. That would be a compound direct object for the idea of selling. And then the sitting would be the participial verbal idea of with the compound subject of the ones selling and the ones dealing with coins, coin dealers, or the money changers. So we'll have fun with that. We're not too far away from starting to learn how to diagram these things. But you'll find that if you learned any diagramming of English, you can kind of throw it out the window when it comes to Greek in some aspects. Some of it's going to be similar, you know, subject, verb, that type of thing. We'll try to follow them both. But you have to incorporate some rather innovative diagramming techniques in Greek because of the complexity of some of the sentence structures and so forth, and the use of participles so frequently and so forth. So we'll get into that. Okay. I think I may want to try that after we do these case functions and then do the article later. We'll see. Okay, verse 15. Mark, I guess you're next.
To Kerman Kai Tas Tra Pates Anet Tripton.
Okay. Good.
And having made a whip out of cords, he threw out everyone out of the temple.
Okay.
Complex. sheep and the cattle, and
this is another word for money changers here.
What is this whole from Kai to Terma?
Yes. You might want to start out. You notice you have ta te proba ta. That te there is kind of like a chi in front of the ta there, and you might start off one of those structures where both and type of thing. So both the sheep and the cattle, and the money changers. And of the money changers. See, we've got a genitive there. Ton, kolubstone. This verb, exdechen, is to pour out. So he poured out of the money changers the coins of the money changers, in other words.
And
so he didn't pour the money changers out, but he poured the coins out.
And of the money changers, he poured out.
Karamata is just coins.
Is that singular?
It's plural. Ta karamata, you mean?
I have told
Carol. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. I'm looking back and forth between two texts here. So if it's told Carol, yeah, it's just singular, the coin. Okay. It's probably collective now and then.
The coin and
that
looks like almost looks like trapeze.
Yeah, I know.
Trapeze artist.
That means tables. I don't know what the connection is.
Turned upside down the table.
Yes, exactly. Kind of turned up the tables, you know, strepho and anna. So, yeah, or dripso. Okay, good. Is there any other comment, question on any of these? Yes?
Well, is Columbus stone also another one?
Yeah, that's what they have here, and I'd have to do a word study on these. They give coin, interlinear gives coin dealers for the first one up there, kermatistas, you know, from kerma meaning coin. And then kolubis stone, they give as money changers.
They give for the root of the first one is kero,
yeah.
Kappa, that's on the other. And it says cut off the hair here, but then down below it says something. Clipped or small change.
Oh, okay. That's where they got the idea.
Mm-hmm. They mean that they're clipping.
But the other word okay.
Out here
is
the actual
Kulubistum.
Kulubis was
a
the name of a small coin.
Okay. A little bit more specific then. Okay. So they're apparently used somewhat synonymously then. All right. Any other questions there? This pouring out is from ek-che-o. Ek-che-o. So we've got an e-o verb there. And let's see, there was another interesting word there. Oh, this word for ropes. It's kind of a good one to try to pronounce. A sigma with a chi following it. Skoinion. Don't see that too commonly. Oh, it's ek, it's ek, epsilon kappa, chi, epsilon omega. Ek-che-o, okay? A little hard to pronounce a kappa and a chi together. Okay. Yeah.
Mike, I noticed that there's a variant down there. And I was just kind of curious, not necessarily in reference to grammar, but I'm wondering with P66 and 75, I know those are older manuscripts, I'm wondering how that would relate to the ones given for reading they have in the text. Do you have any ideas on that?
You mean on the whip?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see, I'd have to check here what the real difference. Tragelion. Okay, as a whip, yeah, that would be. Yeah, to it's either the difference between making a whip or making something as a whip. In other words, he's taking cords and making them as a whip. Apparently, the distinction is that one's saying he made a whip, and the other's saying he made something like a whip. In other words, he made something that served as a whip. Yeah.
What I'm wondering is
with the weight, where would the weight go? Okay. Well, this one's a little tough because you've got Aleph and B on one side. And P66 and 75, I don't think, is that early. P66 is.
Yeah, it is.
What's 75? I thought that was a little later. 66, I think, is early. Unless I got those reversed.
66,
yeah, okay, that's real early.
75 is third century.
Okay, 75 is third. It's a little later, but it's still the same ballpark. I don't know. There might be something in the commentary about that. Certainly this doesn't make any theological difference.
I mean, they're going with, obviously, Aleph.
Yeah. I don't know what kind of... Well, they give a B rating, so that's fairly confident. I'm sure it's P66 and 75 that are making the doubt. Codex 33's got that, too. So I don't know. I'd have to look at their... You know, they just probably putting more confidence in... If they get both Aleph and B on the same side, they're usually pretty confident in that. But those are old readings. Do you have the commentary there?
Yeah, it says if this word had been present in the original text, there's no good reason that would account for it having been omitted from the other witnesses. On the other hand, it is probable that copyists introduced the word in order to soften somewhat the bald statement that Jesus made a whip of cords.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like it is a softening statement, but that's their reasoning. In other words, they've got it pretty well evenly divided as far as weight, and then they're saying, it's good to look up these things from time to time just to kind of see what rationale goes into this textual situation. Quite a surprising thing sometimes, and you kind of play a dangerous game when you start speculating as to why, you know, how this could have happened or that could have happened, you know. We've gotten into some real interesting discussions on that among the teachers and John 1:18, for example, where you decide, well, did they, you know, there's a principle, and one principle is in textual things is you prefer the more difficult reading, assuming that a difficult reading is probably the more accurate one, and that things would tend to be streamlined from difficult readings to simpler readings. On the other hand, if the people who were doing the manuscripts and collating these things originally had the same philosophy, then it may be that you should prefer the more difficult reading because they probably would have done that. Gets into a rather tricky thing. On the whole, you know, you're probably going to be safe with the principle, but it can't really determine everything every time, especially if you've got a couple of readings available and that were already in existence at a particular time, and then all the manuscripts they have after that, both readings were already available. You can make the assumption that maybe they did prefer the more difficult reading. Interesting. Okay, better not get into manuscripts here. We'll be here for a long time. All right. Where we leave off? 16 and Dale.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we had trouble with Arata, Tata, and Susan.
Okay. The Arata is from Agiro, I believe, or Iro, probably. Oh, just Iro. It's an imperative. It means to arise, an aorist imperative. So arise, and then these things, or excuse me, not arise, but lift up. Lift up these things from here. Literally, lift these things up from here. In other words, pick these things up and take them out of here. That kind of an idea.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right.
And two things is from here.
Yes, from here in Tuthin. Yeah, that's what they give in the interlinear, at least. Probably want to do a word study. Take these things away from here is the way they're translating it in the world.
And Tuthin was selling the doves.
Mm-hmm.
Lift up these things from here.
Mm-hmm.
Make not. The house of my father, a house of worship
there. Okay, good. And that poiete is interesting. It's a present imperative rather than an aorist. Like the arata was an aorist, And that's kind of an immediate command, take these things out of here. And then the poiete is a present imperative, be not making. Be not making. It's kind of the idea of a more of a continuing action. It's kind of interesting. So be not making the house of my father a house of merchandise or whatever. House of merchandise selling. We get the word emporium from that. Emporiu. So the idea of merchandise. Okay. Notice here we have a double, well, we have one of those object complement type things to make something something. And so we have make my the house of my father, first accusative, and then another accusative, house of merchandise. Okay? Yes?
In Tucson, they just say, this is an adverb, they don't break it down any more than that.
Okay.
Answer from this place.
Uh-huh.
Or there's a place where it says, and Tucson, Kai, and Tucson. Which means hence and hence, or on each side.
Okay. That thin morpheme on the end is a real indicator of from. Anothen, from above, you know, you've got, so N2 thin. I didn't recognize the N2 as a, you know, it's possibly the preposition N involved, but I don't know if it really is or not. But what they just give is from here, right? Okay.
Yeah, or from this cause.
From this what?
From this cause.
Oh, okay. Okay.
James 4:1.
Might be from using the picture in a conceptual way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, verse 17 then.
I know there's one thing like it looked like that. He drove out the cattle and the sheep and then all the people had done. Apparently, he did a different thing and then he pulled up to leave.
Mm-hmm. Told them to pick up their stuff and go, yeah. That might have been just mercy that if he knocked over the cages and the doves flew away, you know, they might not be able to recover them. Although we might check the other gospel accounts too and see if there's any variations on that. But that may be the case.
Mm-hmm. The his disciples remembered that it was written or that it had been written.
Right.
Deal of your house
have
eaten me up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the way
to swallow
me down.
Yeah, it's got kata phagatai. That's quite a graphic word. Eating me down, you know. We say eat up. They say eat down. You know, I don't know where you're starting from the top or the bottom, you know. But, you know, total consumed. And that kata has often got that idea of finality and totality to it. You know, like kata prino, you know, final and judging down. So, literally, they would say eat down, we would say eat up. That's kind of interesting. But the idea is total consumption. Okay. And, well, nice, you had a nice perfect verb form there, too. Perfect passive participle there. That it has has been written, it is in the state of having been written. The deal of her house has eaten, will eat me up, or has, will consume me.
Is it present tense, is eating me
up? Let me check that form. It's a perfect, no, let's see. No, it's a future middle form. It's from Kates Theo, and our problem is because it's an irregular future. This is a future form, future middle form. It's interesting. It must be deponent in the future.
Third person future.
Yeah.
From Catastio.
Mm-hmm. Catastio. Mm-hmm. Estio is, you know, Estio is your word for eating, and Phagomai is your. Phagomai was the aorist form. I guess in the future it's also.
Yeah,
it's very irregular, and so you don't have any sigmas or anything. But it's technically a future middle form, and it certainly must be deponent then, because it's got an active meaning. So a deponent irregular future form. Okay, any other questions? Verse 18, Bryce?
Apek rithaison nun hoi vidaioi kai epon alto tis simeon de kin.
Dek Nuace. Yeah, Dek Nuace.
Dek Nuace.
from Dekumi.
Amen. Hoti Tauta Koye.
Okay.
And the Jews therefore answered and said to him, what's it, Dekumi?
This means to show. It's from Dekumi, which means to show, and this is just a second person plural present. So what sign are you? Second person singular, excuse me. Present form. So what sign are you showing or do you show?
What sign do you show because the things you do?
Because you are doing these things, yeah, or that in order that you are doing these things. You know, what sign do you show that you do these things? So you show to us, you mean, it's to us. Amen. So what sign do you show to us, are you showing to us, that you do these things in order that you, in other words, they're looking for some justification for his doing these things. Or you could say, because you do these things, because you are doing these things. What sign do you show to us because you are doing these things?
Strange mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here they just get mad, and there they stop. Why?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. I guess the mentality is that if he's really a prophet of God, and that, you know, see, if he's going to come in and overthrow the temple, what authority do you have, you know? And if he's obviously not part of the religious establishment, what kind of supernatural signs do you have, you know, to show to us that you are really have the authority to do this? Okay, that is an interesting thing, though. I think Don brought that out in his messages on that. That, you know, why not just grab the guy and lock him up? You know, I mean, anybody comes through and starts turning over your tables and so forth, and most people, especially Jews, aren't going to take that, you know. Okay, very interesting. Yes, Steve. 19.
Egero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that accent in the end is important here. So. Okay.
Jesus answered and said to them, destroy or set free the temple, and in 3 days I will raise it.
Right, I will raise it. Okay, good. And that is a future form. That accent on the end there is indicative of future. This is from Egero, Epsilon Iota, Epsilon Gamma, Epsilon Iota, Rho, Omega is your dictionary form. And then Egero, you get a suppletion and an accent shift for the future form. Yes, right, to raise up. Mm-hmm. So in 3 days I will raise it up. And there's your formula again, apikrithe kai apen. We talked about that before. Okay. Any other questions on that, Steve?
Exactly the distinction
between the naos and the hieron. Well, hieron is more the whole temple complex, you know, the whole, everything that's included in the temple. The naos is the sanctuary, I've heard it said either as the Holy of Holies itself or just the sanctuary, including the holy place and the Holy of Holies. I'm not certain to be dogmatic about it, but it seems to involve the actual place of God's dwelling, you know, God's dwelling in the temple, as opposed to the courts and the grounds and the whole works. Okay, and so he's purposely choosing that word, because that's the word that connoted the place where God dwelt. Yes?
Yeah, well, I've heard it's just the Holy of Holies. I didn't understand...
Yeah.
The next verse along there where the Jews returned in 6 years or whatever. But if it does mean the temple building itself, the sanctuary with the Holy of Holies, that would make a lot more sense.
Right. Yeah, that may be part of the basis for why they conclude that too. But I've heard it, you know, somebody ought to do a real thorough word study on that just to get the total connotation of that. And, you know, it's a word that's from Greek, so you kind of have to look at what the Greeks, how they were using it, and then look how the New Testament was using it. So you can find passages where it's obviously referring to the holy place and not the Holy of Holies, but it uses naos, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know if that's been done, but that might be an interesting study for someone to do. Okay.
We did a study in doctrine for some reason on that word, that it's, you know, it's from too loose.
Mm-hmm.
Imperative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're using here to destroy.
Yes.
Which is rather strange.
Yeah, it is. The idea is dissolution, you know. And there's we had some other compound verbs associated with this that had the idea of destroy and so forth. Was it
ordering them to, you know, loosen.
Yeah, right.
Somebody cares, you know.
Yeah, loose this temple in 3 days, I will raise it up. And obviously from the fact that he says, I will raise it up, you know, you can infer that the kind of loosing they're talking about. In other words, if he was in prison, you know, loosing would have a different connotation there, more of a release and so forth. And that's why some of these compound verbs will further specify it. It's a little bit ambiguous here, but the context will usually set it, adjust it. But, and then, of course, how you loose a temple, you know, the term loosing applying to a temple built of stones that are put together, to loose that would have the idea of releasing the constraints on each stone that hold it in place. You know, in other words, knocking it apart somehow or causing it to be... no longer one structure. Okay, verse 20, who's next? Dale.
Apon un poi iudaioi tessar rapmata kai hex esesin oiko don mete konaos kutos kai su en kristin enerais
to get
race
out of torn. Okay. Therefore, the Jews said, 40 and 6. Uh-huh. Right. So Rakon has 40, and then the X is 6. 40 and 6.
40 and 6 years.
Mm-hmm. And this is from oikodomeo, to build. This is a passive, aorist passive form, so it was built.
This temple was built.
Yeah, and you might supply kind of in 40 and 6 years, you know, even though there's no preposition there. So in 40 and 6 years was built, this temple. It's a future form. It's a little tricky, that accent on the end again, ege race. It's the same as egero there we had earlier. This is the second person form, but it is a future form. It's an irregular. It's from egero, and it's one of those ro endings, and they don't like to put sigmas on those rows. So it gets a suppletion and an accent shift. So this is a future form. You will raise it up, and the question idea is just coming from context, too. In other words, it could be a statement. You know, they could be saying, you will raise it up, and, but it's not likely they're making a statement. They don't believe it, so they're questioning it.
Blocking it.
Yeah, right. Okay. Was there another question?
Just one question on oikodom mete. Isn't that that the idea of continuing action that has been being built or something to... show that it's not complete yet, or?
Well, actually, this form is just an aorist passive form. If it were a perfect passive form or something, that might give that more of that connotation. It can, or it may or may not. In other words, it's got the indefinite aspect, and that opens it up for that possibility. Oftentimes, an aorist we do translate as a perfect in English, and this might be one instance in which we would. You know, this is having been being built for this long. You know, in other words. They're not the verb. This verb does not committed to having been built. This verb could be very easily used in reference to a building that was completed, or with reference to a building that was not yet completed. That's because the aorist is indefinite. If you had a perfect form, it might be a little bit more precise. But
I think the temple wasn't finished.
Yeah. Right.
That's what I was
yeah, it was still in the process. You know, our historical information indicates that.
Okay.
Talk about utility.
Right.
time to sleep.